welcome to today's episode. You are in for a treat today, learning about someone who is helping others to thrive after alcohol abuse and being able to live a life that is actually maybe better than what you thought. And she's also going to present something that is a reframing of how you can become free from alcohol addiction or be able to do it in a way that is maybe not something you've heard about before, but is very kingdom focused. And so I want to bring to the stage here Katie Lane. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me.
You are most welcome. Well, let me formally introduce you. So Katie struggled in secret with heavy drinking for nearly a decade until she learned about a revolutionary approach to conquer her drinking problem that almost nobody is talking about, a way that is very, very revolutionary. Through this method, over the course of 1 year, Katie went from drinking a bottle of wine a night to a few glasses a few times a month to completely alcohol-free, as she genuinely kept forgetting to drink as her desire faded away. And now she's an advocate for this approach and guides others to their lasting freedom from problem drinking. Katie also really believes that God is using this method as a tool to free others from alcohol addiction on a regular basis. Please, people tell Katie that they have been praying for this answer for their alcohol addiction and God led them to this. Oh, what a powerful, powerful statement to hear, you know, when you know that you're onto something that is bigger than you. And so Katie, from Thrive Alcohol Recovery is your business or ministry. What would you call it?
You know, it's a little bit of both. It is a business, but we also have a ministry component as well, where we have a Christian aspect of our program. And we also offer scholarships to our program for people who can't afford it. So I would say it's a little bit of both.
So like a business tree.
Oh, I haven't heard that before. That's at least, yeah,
that's,
yes.
That's a new term, you know, business, ministry, business tree. Katie, so I did read a little bit in your bio about your background, but I would love to know if there's anything else in that that would help our listeners understand a little bit about how you came to be so passionate about this subject as well in helping others. Maybe if there's any other details you want to fill in before we get into some of the nuts and bolts of how you do that.
Yeah. So maybe just a bit about my struggles with alcohol, because I'm imagining that somebody out there can relate, whether it's you or a loved one. And this is something that, you know, it can impact anybody. I have met so many people who love the Lord and are faithful Christians, but they struggle with an alcohol use disorder. And that's a term that we use in the medical community now, alcohol use disorder, because it exists on a spectrum. People can be mild, you know, maybe they drink two glasses of wine every night, but that's like something that has control over them. And it's not a lot, but they have to have those two glasses, or maybe it's more, maybe they're more moderate, or maybe they're more severe. And so for me, I struggled for, you know, nearly 10 years with my drinking. I did not know the Lord during that time. He actually saved me in 2020. So once I got sober is when I got saved. But I struggled for nearly 10 years with my drinking and tried to moderate, kind of willpower myself to drink less. I tried to quit countless times. I don't even know how many times. And I kept returning to drinking again. And the reason I would go back to alcohol again is really because I had this overwhelming desire to drink, kind of like an itch that I needed to scratch. And I now know that is alcohol craving and mental preoccupation with drinking. And that is really a neurological issue that has to do with changes that happen in the brain when somebody drinks excessively over a long period of time. I think a lot of us, you know, we don't set out to become addicted to alcohol, but before we know it, one glass of wine in the evening turns into two, then it turns into a bottle. And before we know it, we're kind of in this pit that we can't get out of. And for me, I was finally able to escape it after years and years of trying when I learned about this incredibly effective, evidence-based, science-based treatment that actually works to fix the issue of alcohol addiction in the brain neurologically. Mm-hmm. And as you kind of read in my bio, what happened for me over time is I just kind of fell out of love with alcohol. I became extremely uninterested in it to the point of mm-hmm. quitting it about 5 years ago now. So that's a bit of my story.
Well, background. So Katie, before we get into the actual approach and some of the aspects of that, I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to, and again, you know, to help people understand how people actually, you know, what are some of the reasons why sometimes it's social, sometimes it's other ways, how they get into drinking. And what did you know, what did you discover about yourself as to what it was doing for you or why you were so drawn to it?
Yeah, you know, I think it impacts everyone differently. A lot of people develop alcohol use disorder or problems with alcohol when something traumatic happens in life. They're going through a divorce or mm-hmm. a death or something like that. Just, you know, lots of stress at work, whatever it is. A lot of people will start drinking more excessively during those times, and they don't do it thinking, oh, this is going to cause me to get addicted. They think, oh, I need some relief from this pain or stress. A glass of wine will help. And it's really easy to fall into an alcohol use disorder in those times. Mm-hmm. But I will say not everyone develops alcohol use disorder because of difficult times. And my story is one of those where, like many Americans, I started drinking really heavily in my early 20s when I turned 21. And I thought, this is a phase. It's okay for me to do. You know, I'm supposed to do that. I'm 21. I'm supposed to go out to bars. And I did it kind of naively, not realizing mm-hmm. how addictive alcohol was and thinking it was just a phase I was going to go through. And in a few years, I'll, you know, rein it in and kind of focus on my career and life and things like that. But once I tried actually a few years later to cut back on my drinking, I couldn't. And that's when I realized I was in a place of more of an alcohol addiction. Mm. And it had control over me, and I no longer had control over it. And thirdly, the final thing I'll say is some people start drinking excessively to cope with something really stressful or difficult in life. Mm-hmm. But then years and years go by, and they've kind of overcome that or healed from it, but they still continue to drink too much alcohol. So the reason that they started drinking excessively is not necessarily why they continue to drink excessively today.
So now it's become a developed habit that is part of their life, right?
Yeah, exactly. Habit. And the brain has changed. So they want to drink on a very neurological level and a very powerful part of the brain. It's almost like their brain is giving this compulsion to drink because it's gotten so accustomed to the rewarding benefits that alcohol provides neurologically.
Wow. So tell us a little bit more about this protocol or this approach that you now help others with that helped you and that helps other people to stop drinking or heal from their problem drinking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's called the Sinclair Method. It's named after the physician who discovered it over 30 years ago. So it's not a new treatment. It's actually been around for decades, and there's lots and lots of research into it. But a lot of people don't know about it. And there's, you know, I could spend an hour telling you why that is. But really, I think it's largely because this treatment is really unique because it's not an abstinence-based treatment. Mm. People actually start it while they're still drinking alcohol. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but part of my story and many other people is that we want to get this issue under control, but we can't stay sober. And again, mm-hmm. it has to do with the craving that's going on in the brain. Mm-hmm. So what this treatment does is someone starts on it while they're still drinking. And over time, it helps them to reduce their drinking to alcohol and ultimately eliminate their alcohol craving and make it much easier for them to either, you know, drink in moderation or drink socially, or like me, quit drinking without really having to force it, just really becoming uninterested in alcohol over the course of the year I was on this treatment. So this protocol uses a medicine called naltrexone. It's also a generic medicine. It's very cheap. Mm. It's been FDA approved for alcoholism since the 90s. And how this protocol works, basically, just I'll use my story as an example. So I started taking naltrexone before I drank. So an hour before I drank, I would take this medicine. And what this medicine is doing is sitting on receptors in the brain that, again, would otherwise be getting this flood of feel-good hormones when we drink. And when this medicine blocks those receptors, it makes drinking slightly less rewarding. It doesn't make someone sick. It doesn't make it a terrible experience. It's just not as rewarding. And so what happened for me is I was a daily drinker, at least a bottle of wine a night, usually more. And I started taking this medicine beforehand. And over time, what happened is I could no longer drink a bottle of wine anymore. I'd have two glasses and I would just be like, I don't want any more. It doesn't sound good. I started having alcohol-free days that were easy and not forced. Like, I just don't feel like drinking today. And I also noticed my thinking about alcohol was starting to quiet down. So I wasn't craving alcohol as much. And I just felt like my mind was so much more expansive because I wasn't thinking about, oh, am I going to drink tonight or am I going to drink this weekend? Mm-hmm. That just started to fade away. And so over time with this treatment, my alcohol consumption just continued to reduce. My interest in alcohol reduced. And I ultimately quit drinking after about a year on this protocol. And it was done by accident. I didn't mean to quit drinking. My last time I drank, I just never drank again after that. Mm. And this treatment has it's been clinically tested over and over again, and it's been proven to have a 78% success rate with people. Mm. So it's wildly effective, yet wildly unknown.
And so the obvious question is now, does a person have to continue to take this medication after they've stopped, even years after?
Nope. The results are permanent. So I used the protocol. I was taking the naltrexone before drinking. And the longer I was on the treatment, I was drinking so infrequently. Like toward the end, I was drinking maybe one glass of wine once a month. Mm-hmm. So I was only taking the naltrexone once a month when I drank. And now I haven't drank in over 5 years. I haven't taken the medication in over 5 years because following the protocol, I was only taking it before drinking to really help rewire my brain so it can unlearn, hey, alcohol does not equal this massive reward anymore. And so I tell people it feels like my brain, the addiction's been erased from my brain. Like I'm completely healed. I don't miss drinking. I don't want to drink. I don't fear that I'm going to run out and drink tomorrow. It's gone.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's like it rewires your brain in some way. Wow. That's so powerful. So how is this different from the AA or other abstinence-based programs out there?
Yeah, it's different because AA and other abstinence-based programs really require abstinence as the first step. And I'm very glad those programs exist. My dad is sober because of AA. So I think that they're really helping some people, but they're not helping everybody. Mm-hmm. And this treatment is different because it also works to deal with the alcohol addiction on a neurological level. I have been in this field for 6 years now, and I hear from people all of the time who are in abstinence-based programs, and they tell me, I haven't drank in 6 months, but I really want to drink, or I haven't drank in 2 years, but I still think about drinking every day. I fight that urge every single day. And that's the challenge for a lot of people in abstinence-based programs is that the group support is amazing. Giving this problem over to God is amazing. And I believe he can supernaturally heal people from it. Absolutely. But what these programs aren't doing is dealing with the neurological aspect of it. And so a lot of people have to white knuckle it. They have to force themselves to stay sober. And if you look at the data of abstinence-based treatments, the relapse rate is really high. There's one study that said within 6 months of leaving an abstinence-based program, 80% or more of people will relapse. And so typically those relapse, you know, they're really serious events where they kind of return back to binge drinking again, and they have to go back to rehab and things like that. So this treatment is different because it started while someone is still drinking alcohol. So it's intended for people who are currently drinking, and it gradually helps them cut back their alcohol consumption over time by dealing with the issue on the root level, which is neurologically in the brain. And a lot of people, even when I started this treatment, I was like, there's no way I'm going to quit drinking. Like, I want to be a moderate drinker. And I did that for the majority of the time on the treatment. But after a year, I was so uninterested in alcohol that it was really easy for me not to drink. So stark contrast to when I would try to quit drinking before this treatment, I'd be like, okay, don't drink today. Don't drink today. Right. Like that's not
your willpower.
Right. Exactly.
Well, two things come to mind as I hear you talking about that is one is, you know, one of the things, and I agree, you know, AA has really helped so many people and all the different offshoots of that program. But one of the things that I don't agree with in that program is that you're labeled always an alcoholic.
Yes.
You know, your identity is labeled this. And from a kingdom perspective, I don't think that is accurate, that we should, you know, hang on to those labels as part of our identity. And because I believe that we can be free from something and not be defined by that. The other thing that I'm thinking about is I remember years ago, I had developed some let's call them food sensitivities. And so I went to a naturopath. And at that point, I had heard other friends of mine saying, oh, you know, they are always going to be staying away from those particular foods because their body doesn't like it, da, 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 you know. Well, a friend of mine referred me to this particular naturopath that also happened to be a medical doctor. And his approach was, yeah, you don't have to stay away from these foods the rest of your life, because what we're going to do is we're going to change something in how your body is reacting to this, and so that it heals you in some way, so that you can just be more sensitive to things. But at the same time, it's not going to debilitate you and restrict how you. So it's kind of similar to what I hear you saying in some ways, where it's something that changes something in your neurological, you refer to, that just now gives you the power that you need and the extra that you need to not engage in that lifestyle anymore. And so I think this is powerful. Obviously, with the Holy Spirit, that's even that much more effective and powerful. So you mentioned that during COVID, and I would imagine, you know, there's a lot of trauma that happened during shutdowns and all the stuff that went on during the last couple of years, that many people, and you specifically talked about how women drank, you know, the drinking for women went up by about 40%.
Yeah.
How have you seen that with people who have gone through your particular approach, the Sinclair approach, in terms of how COVID affected them?
Yes. Oh my goodness. So I've lost count of how many people have told me, you know, like, yeah, maybe I was drinking a little bit too much before COVID, but it wasn't that bad. But when COVID happened, that's when things really got out of hand. And often I hear people say, since they were working from home, maybe they used to start drinking at 5 o'clock when they got home from work. Now they're drinking at 4, then at 3, then at lunchtime, then on Fridays, they just start drinking, you know, first thing in the morning. And so what I've really seen with people in our program and those using the Sinclair method is that, you know, a lot of them maybe had some type of problematic drinking before, but COVID definitely escalated it. Mm-hmm. Or if it was problematic before COVID, then it just got like even worse, to where it was just, you know, really taking up a huge part of their life. And so that's the challenge I was kind of talking about before, where once we get in this place where we're drinking too much, it's almost like we're caught in a trap of alcohol use disorder. And logically, we think, okay, the answer is not to drink. That's the logical way to deal with this. But the challenge lies in the fact that when we have an alcohol addiction, it's not impacting the logical part of our brain. Like in the morning, we can say, I'm not going to drink tonight. And that's the logical part of the brain. But the part of the brain that's driving the addiction is more this unconscious survival part that overrides that logic. And it's like this survival need in a way. It's like, I need a drink right now. And it really does feel like a need. And any logic and reason kind of goes out the window, which is why it's so hard for a lot of people once they're in that disorder cycle, again, mild, moderate, or severe, it's hard for them to get out of it. And so many people struggle for years to try to get out of it on their own.
Hmm. Is this drug something that they can buy over the counter, or does this have to be prescribed?
It's a prescription medication, so you do have to get it from a doctor. Any doctor can prescribe. Some general practitioners may not prescribe if they're not familiar with it or they're not comfortable treating alcohol use. I've just seen that over the years. But gratefully now, like, this has changed in the last 5 years I've been in the field with telemedicine. There are now, at least here in the U.S., telemedicine doctors who specialize in this medication for alcohol use who prescribe. So like when people join our program and if they have the prescription, great. If they don't, we can refer them to one of our telehealth physicians who will evaluate and make sure they're a good candidate for it. And what I've seen, I'm not a doctor, but I've been a coach to people for over 5 years on this treatment. What I've seen is most people are good candidates for the treatment. Of course, that's what the doctor will decide. But if you look up naltrexone online, it's a pretty benign medicine. It's been around for decades, and it's actually used for a lot of different things.
Can you spell that?
Naltrexone, naltrexone.
Trex, naltrexone, naltrexone. Yep. Just for our listeners to be able to write it down and seek it out if they need it. So a few more questions here. If someone's listening today and they're asking a question, well, how do you know if you have an alcohol use disorder?
Yeah. And honestly, I think that's a question, if we're asking ourselves that question, like, am I drinking too much? Is this problematic? I think that's a sign that we may be somewhere, you know, the term commonly gets used, like a gray area drinker, where, you know, perhaps we're, you know, we have control during the week when we're doing our work and kids and all of that. But then the weekend, maybe we overdo it, or maybe we're having control during the day. And then in the evening, we have that bottle of wine a night. And I think a really simple way to think about it is just to ask yourself, is alcohol causing any harm in your life that is impacting you in a negative way? And if that's happening, and you continue to use alcohol in that way, that's a sign of alcohol use disorder. And that's part of the DSM-5 kind of diagnosis criterion that physicians will use. And so for me, alcohol was causing a lot of harms in my life, just like hangovers, weight gain, irritability, you know, not showing up for commitments in my life that I said I would. Honestly, driving under the influence, I did that, unfortunately. And I admit that now, because I think a lot of us kind of do that against our own desire and will. So I think really understanding, like, is alcohol negatively impacting my life anyway? And when it does that, do I continue to drink anyway, whether it's the next day or the next week? So that's a really simple way to analyze it. And I want to say real quick, too, because you said something earlier about Alcoholics Anonymous and requiring to label yourself an alcoholic. And I'm friends with a recovery pastor who is a huge proponent of this method. And he's like, you're a child of God. You're not an alcoholic. And so he's really big on not putting that label on people, because it really can be very stigmatizing. And so I just want to say, if you're in a place today, someone listening, and they're wondering if they have this issue with alcohol, you don't have to say, oh, I'm an alcoholic. For me, I view it more like, I've developed this bad habit of drinking too much, and I need to get it under control. Like, I've developed a bad habit of eating too much sugar, and I need to get it under control. So there's a different way to look at it without putting this unhelpful, stigmatizing label on yourself.
That's so good. Yes. I think that's so important to really affirm, because there is a huge distinction. And again, especially as a Christian, you know, we know that when, you know, if we've been redeemed from something, then that is no longer part of who we are. You know, we kind of die to that area of our life, and then it's no longer part of our, it'll try to pull us back if we let it. But, and I think even having that statement, can be a pullback sometimes of just thinking, you know, I'm always on the edge here. And it's a very subtle, in my opinion, this is just my opinion. It's a very subtle way of allowing the enemy to always kind of keep us in a place of tension. And instead of a place of freedom, instead
that's
of a place
so true. Of freedom. Yeah, that's so true. I know, I never wanted to put that label on myself. And in a way, it kind of made me drink more, because I was like, well, if I'm an alcoholic, then I'm going to do what alcoholics do. And I know some people say it's helpful for them. So like, I think if it helps keep you sober, awesome, use it. But like, we shouldn't make that a prerequisite to people getting help for alcohol problems.
Yeah. So I love when I read your bio, you talked about how people often say to you, you know, I've been praying for an answer, and really felt like God led you to them, this method, this approach. Tell me a little bit more about that, what that does for you and them.
Well, it's really cool. Even my co-founder at Thrive, we run the program together. She is a Christian, but she was a Christian before I was. But when she found this treatment, and she was the first person who told me, you know, I was praying and God led me to this treatment, like her and I met years ago. And then ever since then, like when she said it, I was kind of like, oh, that's really cool. But then another person would tell me that, and another person, and it's not like I was inquiring. They would just offer it. You know, I'm like, how did you find it? Oh, you know, I was praying, and the next day your video came up or your website came up, and I'm just like, wow, this is really cool. And just to see, like, we have a Christian support call in our program, and just to see people who are on this treatment and they're getting this control back over alcohol, and they're getting more involved in their church, or they're opening up more about this with their pastor, other people at the church. And I think, you know, church settings can definitely help with this, but I think, you know, pastors have so much on their plate. Like at my own church, my pastor is the one coming to me. Like, what do I do with this? How can I help someone with this? And so pastors aren't always necessarily able to, you know, work with someone who's struggling with this. They have so much to do. They don't know how to help. And so I think for there to be other options that incorporate science. Like, you know, science does not negate the existence of God, despite mm-hmm. what some people will say. You know, we have science because of God. So I just, yeah, I hear that. It's something I hear regularly. Like, I've lost count of how many people have told me that this is an answer to prayer for them.
So just as we close up here, I would love to know, like, a 1 minute synopsis of how you came to Christ in 2020.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. Oh, so 1 minute synopsis is I was really deep in the New Age movement. I don't know if you're familiar with that, like Buddhism, mm-hmm. psychic, tarot cards, yeah. all that. That was like 10 years. The 10 years I struggled with alcohol is really deep in that, because I actually turned to Buddhism when I was trying to quit drinking mm-hmm. in the very beginning. But I was very immersed in that. And then I went through the Sinclair Method treatment, started in 2017, got sober and quit drinking at the end of 2018. And at that point in time, I really started to become more curious about the existence of God and a one true living God. Mm-hmm. And I remember being more open to the idea of the term God. I didn't like that term before. And I just kept getting these thoughts in my head, like, you know, you consider yourself spiritual, you should read a Bible. Because in the New Age, we're like, it's a spiritual buffet. You just choose whatever you want to believe. And so I was like, I kept getting the thought that I should read a Bible, and I just kept not acting on it. But then I kept seeing people post on Facebook, like Bible verses, and people on the street would come up and be like, do you know Jesus? And I would run the other way, because I had some very negative outlook on what Christians and what Jesus who he was and who he is. But I felt like God would, like, the Bible talks about how he, draws us to him. And I just felt like in little ways, God was drawing me to himself. Like, these little things kept happening over the course of maybe 6 months to a year. And then I remember, with all of these coincidences happening, I was like almost getting annoyed, because I was like, why do people love Jesus so much? Like, this is just crazy. And so one day, for the first time in my life, I prayed, like, because in the New Age, you're really manifesting your reality and you're calling it in and you're creating your reality. But for the first time in my life, I like was humble and I was like, Jesus, if you're real, show me. Like, I kind of wanted to prove everyone wrong that he wasn't real. But then I swear, like, within 24 hours, maybe 2 days, like the Bible talks about, like, the scales were lifted from my eyes. And I could see that the practices I'd been doing with tarot cards and psychics and all of these spiritual crystals, yoga, all this stuff, that it was not of God, and that it was of Satan and a demonic thing I'd been involved in. And I don't know how I had that understanding, because I hadn't read the Bible yet. Like, the Holy Spirit just gave me that understanding. And I went to YouTube and I started watching testimonies of people who were New Age to Jesus. There's so many people out there. And that's how I came to Christ. Yeah.
So good. Wow. Katie, thank you for sharing that. So powerful. I think of another friend of mine who's just come out of the New Age not too long ago into faith, and want to connect her with you. But I'm so glad that you are doing what you're doing, and you are serving the people that need to have what you have discovered, and that you are helping them to find freedom, and not only from their habits, but also in their spiritual life and holistically. And I just thank you for being on today and for what you do. And I know those who are listening are going to be blessed when they hear all this. And where can people find you and find out more about your program if they want to seek you out?
Yeah, they can go to our website, thrivealcoholrecovery.com. And at the bottom of the website, all of our social links are there as well. I'm always putting out videos and just informational content about it. We have lots of free resources on our website, and then they can join the program as well. Thank you so much for giving me a chance to share this. I really enjoyed our conversation.
You're most welcome. Thank you. So those who are listening, make sure you share this episode, like it, share it with someone you love, who may need to even identify whether or not they need what Katie has to offer and be introduced to something, an answer to a prayer that they've been praying. So I know that there are many out there who need this. And so share it far and wide, and make sure that you go to Katie's site and check out what she has to offer. Because whether you know someone now, I'm sure in the future you'll know someone who's going to need it if you yourself are not the person that is needed to access it. So thank you, everyone. We'll see you next time. Have a beautiful day. Remember that your voice is a vehicle of transformation and needs to be heard. Bye, everyone. As you're listening today, you may have felt prompted to say, I want to become a much better speaker. I want to be able to speak with confidence, clarity, and transformational impact. I want to invite you to check out the link in the comments below, wherever you're listening to this. Your voice is an instrument of transformation and needs to be heard. So let it be heard.